subject of Microsoft, you know, he'll say, oh, well, he's going to be a Microsoft hater. And you go, no. He says, now, I've got a different philosophy than Bill Gates does. He says, but that doesn't make, I mean, what's a good description of it? It was like he got all of his tactics from The Art of War or from Machiavelli or something. You know?
Yeah.
He says, I've never read Sun Tzu or, you know, or any of that. It says, but yeah, get enough of what other people think of it to kind of say, well, at least I've got thoughts on the matter from not having read it. And, you know, like, I'll have to be honest. I said, most of my, there are people that I really respect as people. I think they got their heads screwed on straight. Things are proportional in their lives, stuff like that. Gary Kilbell, who's the guy that wrote CPM, he was, you know, his business, Digital Research, which is now long dead, but he came up with this thing. He'd originally written it for Intel, the software, the chip maker. And they didn't want it. They said, that's cute, but we already have something kind of like that and for our development boards, for our microprocessor that we're trying to sell. So, he says, you know, we're not really interested in it. So he said, well, fine. He says, I'll clean it up. He says, and I'll sell it. You know, on the market, $75 a piece. So he started his business doing that. He and his wife, kitchen table, all that fun stuff. They started doing all that. Well, the business started going nuts because right at the very beginning of the microcomputer industry, all those wild and woolly days when every idea was new and, yeah, everything was cool. So he was making good money, you know. He had an office. He had people that worked for him, programmers, all this stuff. And he was doing all this stuff. He was building tools, software tools. He was selling the stuff. He also liked flying. So now that he actually had the resources to do it, he got pilot's license. He got his own plane, you know. And he enjoyed flying around. He worked it into the business, right? Anytime he had to go and do negotiations with some company that he was working with to do software for them, he would fly over there, you know, and he got a kick out of that. He was doing just fine and happy. He even got to the point to where he decided he wanted to give it a shot. There was a TV show called Computer Chronicles on PBS. And he started co-hosting it. You know, he was basically a college professor. You know, he had his doctorate. He was Dr. Gary Kilbell, but, you know, he enjoyed all this other stuff. Put everything in its place, right? He was famous for saying he and Bill Gates were together somewhere. Now, at that time, Bill Gates wrote his basic tool was the basic programming language. He wrote BASIC for all kinds of stuff, all kinds of computers. That was what Microsoft did at the time. And Gary Kilbell said, hey, he said, I'm fine. he says, I've got my niche and I'm happy with it. I think we do a good job with it. He said, I'll write the operating systems for these things, and you can write the BASIC and the, you know, and that kind of software for it. And Bill Gates looked at him and he says, no, no. He says, there's only going to be me. He was right. He ended up being right. But that's because Bill Gates wanted it more than Gary Kilbaugh did. You know, Gary just said, hey, I'm just running the business. Well, I'm doing okay. I'm not trying to rule the freaking universe. You know, I'm trying to feed my family and a few other families. And that's all life is all about, right? Gee whiz. So, yeah, I find myself in the ilk of Gary Kilbaugh. I said, I'm not trying to rule the freaking world. I said, I just want to make enough money to feed my family and to be happy and to have a few things. I haven't gotten to the point of having much of a few things, but we'll see it at some point. Where Bill says, that's what I was talking about in the whole video series. He said, Bill Gates was the departure from that kind of attitude. He said, his mission was to dominate that industry. He didn't know how big it was going to get. And he really didn't have a big vision. But what he did have was that if there was anybody who he felt like was a competitor on any level at all, his job was to destroy them so that he could win. You know, he's kind of the guy that likes to take all the oxygen out of the room and then turn the oxygen back on after everybody else is dead. You know, then I get all the oxygen, right? That's pretty much the way Microsoft operated at that time. I says, now they don't anymore. They've become a more typical business, but when they were first starting out, and for many years, they were very much, I don't care what it takes, we will destroy all competition, and the only person left standing in the room is me. I will have all the business. They will all come to me. And they basically did. They said his basic vision of how it would be was how it was. He just didn't know how big it was going to be. Never thought he was going to be the richest man in the world. It was just incidental to his style. You don't make a deal with Microsoft, or you didn't used to make a deal with Microsoft, unless you were absolutely ready for Microsoft to take over your business and either buy you out if you were lucky, or smother you out until you're dead. There was only a couple of things to do as a Microsoft competitor, or stay so small that Microsoft didn't even matter. You know, you were totally off the radar screen. Which, maybe that's the tact I've taken for a lot of things. So just, you know, have a radar screen. Don't be too weird. Do a little here, do a little there. Because you don't have to rule the freaking universe. Bill Gates has to. It's in his genes, man. He learned something very important from his father, who's a lawyer, very high-powered lawyer in Seattle at the time. And it was that you don't have to be the best. You just have to keep doing what you're doing. And people are going to try to sue you. Because he was really bad. He had very, very evil business tactics. He would steal your stuff. If you did all the R&D, Apple did this all the time, and Microsoft just kind of said, wow, that looks cool. And then about a year later, you'd see them the Microsoft version of it.
Yeah.
And you'd go, wow, wait a minute. That was our idea. And you're going, then you shouldn't have let me see it. Because once I saw it, I said, oh, I can do that. That's the funny thing about innovation. It takes a lot of work to come up with an idea, but once you put it out there so people can see it, it becomes terribly obvious and almost everybody can duplicate it. They might not do as good of a job, or most of the time it doesn't even matter. Microsoft software is not the best. Me?
I'm cold.
Oh, okay. I'm going to be glad to turn a corner, though, when the moment arrives. That's okay. Let's try to be endurant. Sorry, Lee. And so Microsoft would take this stuff, and the people would say, hey, wait, whoa, I think we've got patents on this, or we've got a copyright or something. And then you'd start suing him. And you go, don't sue him. Why not? Because he knows about lawyers. And he knows that you can drag this stuff out for years. And said, the funny thing is, a little software company who's trying to protect its innovations. Most of them did. I don't know anybody who's gone up against Microsoft, won in any significant way, that didn't just ultimately die from trying. And you're going, that's because you're stupid. If Microsoft stole your stuff, your job is to keep doing better, keep making it happen. But these poor idiots would spit to take all their excess money and dump it into a lawsuit. And you go, don't do that. That's dumb. I keep innovating. That's what's going to keep you alive. So, and I'm, you know, it's kind of bad because I say, you know, here's how the business thing goes, this is how I run this class, and it's to prepare you for this reality, and you're going, I said, and let me tell you, I don't participate in it, because I don't like it particularly. Says, is it a reality? No, yeah. Says, are all of us going to ultimately die some horrible death because we just die from overwork? No, probably. Unless we step back and say 50,000 is enough, or 60 or 70 or whatever price you set. This is, don't get sucked into stars in your eyes. Don't think that what you've done in the past is going to see you through for 20 or 30 years. It says it won't. It says most businesses are formed around one product, and that product's got a life cycle. You can keep goosing it, try to update it, make it better. That's kind of why, that's what I say about Illusion Banner. I said, this is a product that saw its heyday about 20 years ago. The fact that you guys are still using it means that you're not willing to make the changes to stay current with the times. You know, so that's indicative. The fact that New Mexico goes through all this trouble trying to stay in bed with Banner, I said, that's your problem. You're paying way too much. Other people are leaving Banner for one reason or another. It doesn't matter what the reasons are. They're just having less and less of a market share. And Illusion makes up for it by charging everybody who's left more. Right?
Yeah.
It says they're also foolish. They keep thinking that if they can retool, they'll get new customers, and you go, no, the best you can do is keep what few customers you have. and you go, that's not a business model. Because at some point you guys need to just dump band, but honestly, it's already kind of happened. You know, there used to be one company and their product was only Banner. Now there's this Illusion organization, which is a conglomerate of about five or six old companies. Banner's just one of their products. And you're going, so basically what you're doing is you've got a package that's for all practical purposes in maintenance mode. They go, it's not innovating, it's not going out there and doing amazing things. Those guys talk about it all the time. This is, but yeah, this is Banner's toast. It's old. It's like VisiCalc. It says you can keep adding crap on the VisiCalc. You can give it a graphic user interface. You can do 500 little things. It says, but honestly, at some point, there's no drive behind making it any better. You want the next guy that's doing some kind of cool in his garage. He says, trust me, that's the stuff you need to jump onto. Because you can't be too conservative. It'll eat your lunch one day. It already is here. I love it. There's a consultant in town right now. She's very interesting. I just happened to sit for about 2 hours in there because they told me they wanted me to come because they were afraid things were going to break, and nothing ever broke. And I'm really grateful I was bored. I was doing other things, but she was telling them all the problems with this thing that she was training them on. And she explained the whole thing. Some guy, some hotshot came in, wrote this whole part of Banner. He didn't obey any of the standards. There weren't really any standards in place at the time, probably. So he wrote this thing. It was completely different from everything else. And then he left. And nobody knows what to do with this thing. But it's absolutely vital to Banner. And so that means you just have to learn the tricks that we've developed over time to keep this silly thing working. And we don't know. We can't get anybody to actually crack that thing open and rewrite it or figure out why on earth he did it the way he did it. He apparently tried several different ways of solving the same problem, but he left all of his work there. Because the problem is, different people picked up on different pieces of his work in progress, and so there's four different ways of doing it, and three of them are wrong. Only one is right, but everybody clung on to two or three that were abandoned. But they can't get people off of them, right? It's out there. If it's being used and it's packaged up in your product, you have to try to support the stupid thing. And you're going, this is exactly why about every 10 years or so, you need to throw away what you got and start all over again. People go, oh, that's so hard. And you go, but so absolutely, desperately necessary that if you don't do it, you'll find the very tools you entrusted your institution in are dying on you. And you're sitting here going, how come we're dying, and I don't understand why. And you go, it's because you haven't updated. Oh, we've gotten new computers every 5 years like we're supposed to. We're doing all that. And you go, that's not the problem. It's just a stupid desktop in your office. It's the software that you trusted all this stuff to. You gotta let stuff go. The problem is that most of the innovators don't care to get into, you know, old markets where something is already, where it's already matured and where there's already big players. It's a pain in the butt to try to beat out big players. You want to go into something that's new, right? But there's no competition yet, so you can at least have that wonderful couple of months or couple of years where you're the only shop in town, right? You can make lots and lots of money until somebody comes and says, hey, that's pretty good, but I know a better way. And they've come up with that better way, and they end up grinding you into the dirt. And you go, that's kind of what's happening here. Illusion is the big, huge monster that's so established, so many places have invested so much time and effort into it, that they can't, they don't feel like they can step away. And that's exactly what they must do. It says, or your attitude's going to take you down more than anything else. It says, you can't do that. Constantly innovating, constantly changing. I know it's a pain in the butt. All your employees scream and yell, but honestly, it's part of keeping your organization fresh, too. You don't want a bunch of 60-year-old people who are basically working with 60-year-old software, and all they say all day long is, we ain't changing nothing. I learned this job the first year I was here, and I've been coasting the whole time. And you go, that's the problem. Everybody starts coasting. And you go, can't do that. That's why when people say, oh, you change jobs every year or two, and you go, yeah. After you've got the basic thing down, you're just coasting. You're just in maintenance mode. And you go, you don't want to start, you don't want to get there. You don't want to stay there. You don't want to do that. Because it'll eat you alive. Just like Bill Gates ate up Gary Kildall. Gary was just trying to hang on to the market he had. And you're going, he was toast from the minute he decided that that was his decision. As soon as Gary passed away, he died young, probably from depression. You okay?
No.
Oh, yeah. It's okay. I was just, you're huffing funny, and I didn't know if you had a problem. I needed to get you somewhere.
No.
Okay.
No, I don't know.
Right. So, yeah. I said, Gary, Gary was a great guy, and like most people, his company pretty much started and died with him. It still limped along for a little while after that. Mostly got bought up by other companies that were wanting to screw Microsoft. You know? Microsoft stole stuff from Gary Kildall, and they had plenty of evidence. But
I'm going to go get my personal report here with you.
Oh, okay. Let's go do that. But that was Gary's first mistake. He thought he had something special. It was good, but, you know, that upon which he could retire. And he could have if he would have handled it better. You know? I think you can still live off one or two products that you've made that are really an amazing thing. But you got to know that if you start a company around it, that don't even bother, that company's going to die. And don't start fighting for it. Know how much money you're going to make off of it, and then know that it's going to fizzle away. You know, it'll be a big game, but it's kind of like J.K. Rowling. It's like, you know, you had a heck of a ride on that thing. My advice is, take the money, be careful. You can write all you want to, you know, but know that you're never gonna hit that again. And I hope the heck you didn't spend all your money trying to ride that freaking barrel ride. I said, it's gonna kill you. As soon as the money starts tapering off, you consolidate, and you say, okay. The problem is, people get too excited about how much money they have. Everybody comes around and tells them how fantastic you are. They're mostly saying it so they can get your money, right?
Yeah.
I want you to invest in this. This is the next great Harry Potter thing. Yeah, it's going to be amazing. It's going to make more money than the original did. And, of course, you get all excited because it went way beyond what you ever thought it would. Yeah, the whole thing kind of gets you, and you got to learn how to just say, I'm going to take a step back, and I'm going to write little stuff. There's always going to be a little bit of a market for somebody who's kind of who did something big, but not much. People mostly follow the cool things. The guy's in a fishbowl. Tell him you need a Dodge catalog for next semester, I guess.